Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker. This is Talk Wrestling on TalkSport 2.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman. I serve as special counsel to your reigning, defending, undisputed WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion, Roman Reigns. And these people are a drag on my time, asking me to remind you that you're listening to Talk. I don't even know what the name of the show is. Talk Wrestling, Wrestling Talk. It doesn't matter to me. And you know why? Because I don't listen to it, and neither should you.
You're listening to Talk Wrestling here on the Fight Night feed from TalkSport, the podcast out every week in association with our Monday night shows on TalkSport 2, the only place on national radio delivering you hot wrestling chat every single week. And what a show we've got coming up for you in this podcast. We have WWE Hall of Famers, the Bushwhackers. We have the current NXT Tag Champions, MSK. We have Simon Miller joining us from What Culture Wrestling to preview WrestleMania Backlash, and Steph Chase from Digital Spy to talk about AEW's Blood and Guts. That's all coming up on Talk Wrestling in your Fight Night podcast feed. I'm Will Gavin, as always, alongside Talk Sports Wrestling's our Alex McCarthy. Two huge interviews, or I guess four huge interviews, with two massive tag teams coming up on the show for you. But we will kick things off with Simon Miller from What Culture Wrestling, looking forward to this coming Sunday's WrestleMania Backlash.
I am very well, guys. It is good to be back. And I was going to make some kind of joke that we could just repeat what we did at WrestleMania, because that's what WWE Raw has been doing for the last few weeks. SmackDown is a tremendous work of art. But I won't do that, and instead I will save all my hilarious jokes for the rest of the segment.
Oh, I was worried you were going to say for other places. I will save all of my hilarious jokes for YouTube. You don't deserve them.
No, I'm still trying to come up with hilarious jokes for that, so give me a while, I'll come up with something.
Simon, are we at the point now where it gets to Monday morning of pay-per-view week and you're like, where is my DM from Alex? Where is it?
I won't lie, I did think about it, yeah. But I would never I would never go as far to presume that I would come back, because you never know. Plans change. In the wrestling world, plans change all the time. But I have now, yeah, got it ingrained in my brain that Monday before a WWE pay-per-view, I should expect a DM at some point. Or hope for one, because I love coming on the show.
We keep him on the hook, Will. Every pay-per-view month, it's going to be up our sleeve.
I like that you wait until the morning of the show. It's like you're dangling it. You're not willing to give him anything in advance. He has to really want it.
I'm Vince McMahon-esque. Listen, until it gets to show day, I don't care. I'm not planning anything long in advance.
Anything can happen on the day, and you may be able to get, like, I don't know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, another big guy that's much better. We should definitely go with Austin. Sorry, Miller, you're out. You're cut.
I want to be in that production meeting where we debate. Listen, we've got Stone Cold, but can we cut Simon Miller? I don't know.
Could we not do both?
I love it.
That would be the breaker right there, Will. That would be
2 hours. Unless Stone Cold is turning up and saying, I will come on and do 2 whole hours, but my caveat is you will have no other guests alongside me, then okay, fine. But otherwise...
you're just fabricating Steve Austin demands now.
But what I'm saying is unless he does that, then, you know, if he's willing to only come on for an hour and 45 minutes, then I'm dedicating the other 15 minutes to Simon Miller. That's what I'm saying.
He's earned his place.
I still got booked. Even with one of the most important people in wrestling history, I still got on the show. See, as always, this is why I look forward to it. because my ego goes up.
You're such a glass half full kind of guy, Simon. That's what you are.
It's just annoying, isn't it?
Well, you're going to need to be that way because we're about to get into, as you say, the repeat card of WrestleMania. For some obscure reason, they said if we chuck WrestleMania as the prefix ahead of Backlash, people will think maybe it's WrestleMania. I don't know what they're actually thinking in terms of a marketing ploy, but nonetheless, SEO, I'm sure, for those who in the writing world will know, maybe it will help. I don't know. But we do have five matches. They are all title matches. Some of them we've seen before, but I will say for Bobby Lashley, Drew and Strowman, the triple threat, the more I think about it, is that more of a welcome thing to add Strowman into the mix?
Now, please correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand, or at least, you know, my prediction is what we're doing right now, is that Braun Strowman has been put into this match, so likely he can take the pin, so we can probably do Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre Money in the Bank. But to get Braun Strowman in the match and to protect Drew McIntyre, we pin Drew McIntyre on Raw. It's just the most confusing, convoluted way, unless they have something else planned. Like, maybe they are going to go in a totally different direction. But I kind of, the only reason I can see, given that it's called WrestleMania Backlash, to add somebody else, is because you want to do Bobby and Drew, but you've gone, oh, we should probably give it, you know, a couple of months before doing it as a singles. But Braun beat Drew, it's just so baffling. The whole thing has been an absolute roller coaster.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're thinking. I agree with everything you just said, and I don't see Lashley dropping the title whatsoever. I think even if they do Drew and Lashley in the future, maybe Drew could do with being out of the title picture for a little bit. I just, I'm not sure fans are clamouring for him to hold the title again after being in the picture pretty much for a year, right? Like, I know he had the Sheamus story break off and that, but pretty much he's been in the title otherwise. I don't know if this is really the route to go, but this is what Backlash is. I mean, it's in the name. You're going to get a lot of people that have lost titles saying, I would like another shot at those. So I get it. I feel like Lashley has to move on to other things. You know, long-term picture, I'm thinking Lashley-Lesnar at SummerSlam would probably be ideal. I don't see Strowman. Although Strowman has famously said he felt his title run was great, I don't anticipate that everyone else feels that way. So I just don't see it. I feel like, although it's nice, it isn't singles again, and it's a triple threat, and it could be some chaos with the three men involved, which I like. I think Lashley retains.
Answer me this. If Shane McMahon wins that cage match, does he earn a place in this? Is it a triple threat with Shane McMahon, with Drew McIntyre, and with Bobby Lashley?
We just established this. Braun beat Drew, right?
It's a nonsense. The whole thing was a nonsense. Raw is mostly a nonsense.
Well, now you are talking, yes.
Yeah, Raw, the build to this match has been utterly baffling. And I think the other issue that, you know, the best championship matches are always ones where you don't really know what's going to happen. Even if you have a really solid idea, deep down you're not 100% sure. And, you know, WWE have done crazier things, but yeah, going into it, it feels like we've already done it. And I just... It's been a bit of a shame. And I agree with, you know, what you guys have said. I would absolutely put Bobby Lashley on his own path now, because as soon as he can have a proper feud with somebody else, he will feel like a brand new champion. And at the moment, we're kind of doing all these repeats. But as you say, it's tough to get too mad at it, given that it is called WrestleMania Backlash.
It's not the only triple threat that we've gained, of course, with Charlotte Flair being added to Asuka against Rhea Ripley, a triple threat for the Raw women's title. I mean, I'm not saying that Charlotte Flair is the Braun Strowman in this situation. I feel like Charlotte Flair makes a little more sense being fitted into
now.
This. What?
let's not tar her with that brush, please.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm not equating her with Braun Strowman, but she has still been dropped into a match where maybe it makes a little more sense, Simon, but it's not necessarily completely sensible.
No, and I think the issue with Charlotte here too is that it does feel like we do this a lot. And I think Charlotte Flair, you know, there is this weird, I don't know what the right word would be, attack-minded... approach by some people who just will not give Charlotte Flair the time of day, even though she looks like a star, she wrestles like a star, you know, clearly has all those Flair genes and is making it work. But, there has been multiple occasions where she has sort of been put in matches. We're like, well, did she need to be put in this match? And again, it all depends on how we spin off from it, because if they even think about putting the title on her now, that just, you know, it doesn't do anything for Rhea Ripley, so that would drive me crazy. Asuka, very sadly, kind of feels like she's fallen back into that position where they know she's so good, you can do whatever you want with her, and sadly, when you get in that position, you don't really win, because people are like, she can lose all the time, and who cares? But, you know, the point is, if Rhea Ripley beats Charlotte Flair in this match, you know, let's say she hits Riptide 1, 2, 3, and then can go, look, I've done Asuka, I've done Charlotte Flair, what's next? Then that's great. And all of a sudden, I don't mind that, you know, Charlotte's been put into it. But I just can't, you know, especially with the women's division at the moment, it doesn't really feel like there's a set plan. You know, on Raw, they've already announced that they're going to basically take, once again, the tag team champion, Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. And they're all having a big six-way, because why wouldn't you do that? Although it does kind of make more sense with Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, because that was all dropped recently, and I thought that was odd. But I also, if we're just talking about it, watching it on Sunday night or Monday morning, whenever, you know, we're going to tune in, this should be really good, right? Like, it should be great.
Yeah. It should be, and that's the thing. Like, I actually think it does make sense to have Charlotte Flair in this match, and I know that Will's eyes are probably rolling right now going, oh, Alex McCarthy, Charlotte Flair fan, but let me get you to the point. She was obviously on course to face Asuka at WrestleMania before she, well, had a mixture of phantom pregnancy and COVID, and that obviously pulled her out. So that was the direction they were going, and she had challenged her, didn't happen. Obviously has the history of Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania for beating her for the NXT women's title. That in and of itself drives people crazy. So as you say, Rhea Ripley being able to exert that or banish that demon over Charlotte Flair would be a big thing for her reign. Do I believe that Charlotte Flair's in the match to take the pin? Probably not. I would imagine Asuka takes the pin and we go to Ripley and Flair as a singles moving forward. But either way, given Flair's history and basically the way WWE position her as basically like a prize fighter, that is essentially what they say. She is nothing but a title specialist, if you believe them. Then I can buy it, right? I just hope that the end goal here is still making Rhea Ripley. Like, my fear is she was put into this WrestleMania situation as really a last resort. It was meant to be Lacey Evans and Charlotte Flair. That got changed. It meant to be Charlotte Flair and Asuka. That got changed. Rhea Ripley comes in, they put her over correctly because Asuka didn't have the steam. Their own doing, of course, not hers. And now you just think, okay, well, if you're going to build the star, then build it. And this is a very good opportunity. The most star power they could put in a match on Raw, to be frank, as long as you have Rhea go over, it's all's well that ends well, I think.
I couldn't agree more. That's exactly how I think it should go. But if Ripley doesn't win, then of course we all have to go on the internet and go absolutely crazy. I just want to make sure they're all on the same page with that one.
Look. Firstly, Simon, I've got to tell you, Alex McCarthy has read me like a book. The moment he started backing Charlotte Flair being in this match, the eyes began to roll. But I do agree with you. There is a longer-term story here. There is a reason that this makes sense. It goes back to WrestleMania last year. And if you're using it to make Rhea Ripley great, because it's telling that story as well, it's Ripley showing that she is the dominant woman in a division that has some pretty dominant women in it in the forms of Charlotte and Asuka. So I have a lot less issue with it here. It's just, again, it feels a little bit like, I don't get why WrestleMania should be for me like a reset. Let's go. Let's tell new stories. Let's start to build for something. And I feel like they maybe are doing that on the SmackDown side of things. Let's turn our attention to the huge Universal title match. Cesaro getting his shot at the big time. Now, I don't think any of us are buying that Cesaro gets the win here. But isn't it lovely to see him getting the opportunity at least?
It really is. And I think the other cool thing about it is, again, you know, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it's always better when you have this seed of doubt. And even less so in this one, I don't believe Roman Reigns is going to lose. But the reason SmackDown is such a tremendous show at the moment is because there's already other directions we can go in, or at least other questions we can ask. You know, what does Jey Uso do? What does Jimmy Uso do? Does Cesaro have any secret friends that he's going to recruit to help him now that he's lost Daniel Bryan? And I think that's why I can't believe at the moment Raw and SmackDown are being written by the same people. Because you have a match here where, again, I imagine all of us will say, yep, Roman Reigns wins. But there's so many things that could come out of the other side. And I hope this, I don't know if it will, but I hope this main event, just because I know what WWE are like, and this could be a one and done for Cesaro when he goes and feuds with Jimmy or Jey Uso, which is fine. But if this is sort of that one peak that most wrestlers get when they've been there a long while, my word, does he deserve it. I hope it goes on last. I hope they give him like 20 minutes. I think they'll tear the house down, and I think they absolutely have the potential to steal the show. And again, I missed out the name of Seth Rollins, because clearly something is going on there as well. So you could do loads with this, and you're going to finish the pay-per-view and go, well, I can't wait to see what happens next.
And that's kind of the key to a great show, right, is having that star that everything trickles down from, and all the seeds and everything's woven into it. Like, maybe all of the best eras you can think of operate that way. And Roman's kind of got that right now. Like you said, you've got Jimmy Uso returning. He's in the midst of it with Cesaro, coming off the back of the Daniel Bryan feud. And the Seth Rollins stuff, I would be very shocked if they're not heading that way to SummerSlam. I really would. I feel like there's some kind of underlying seeds that they're planting. And as I mentioned on Twitter, there is some kind of energy or chemistry when them two are on screen that their history just kind of like comes at you. It's tangible. Palpable is probably the word. And it's one of those things for Roman, I don't think anyone is going to be beating him, much less Cesaro. And I say that through the eyes of WWE. I feel like he's going to be holding it probably all the rest of this year, maybe towards next WrestleMania. And I would love it if Cesaro did get a title run of some sort at some stage. But at the same time, as big as a Cesaro fan I am, I'm not sure that you would take it off Roman right now anyway. So it's one of those situations. I would be really pleased, the same as you would, Simon, if he just gets to show the hell out, right? In the main event, let him go balls to the wall with Roman and put on an absolute classic. Because sometimes I feel like WWE placate us, right? And they kind of go, well, you know, we've given Cesaro a shot here, when really we're clamouring for him to actually have the title. They'll go, well, you know, we gave him a title shot and he had a featured match, blah, blah, blah. So I hope this isn't it for him, but I certainly hope that he shows he belongs on Sunday. And he absolutely will. Let's make no mistake about it. The guy is absolute magic.
I think my only concern is that everything you've said there is bang on. But what Simon was saying is there's so much potential for shenanigans here that I would quite like to see just the two of them go at it for 20 minutes without any shenanigans and save the shenanigans for SmackDown. How many times can one man say shenanigans in a sentence? I do not know, but I've just managed it four times and I'm pretty pleased with myself. That would be my only mild concern about it. But in terms of the talent involved, the ability to book these matches, SmackDown title matches over the last 2 years, like I'm all here for it. I think it's going to be absolutely superb stuff. But again, for I think the third one in a row, we're all pretty agreed that that's a Roman Reigns win. Anyone reckon Bayley beats Bianca?
No.
I'm not going to say next, though, because I'm not being dismissive, because I still expect this to be a barnstormer.
It'll be very good.
I'll tell you guys.
Oh, go on, Simon. Please, you go.
Okay, I will, but I've caused the situation. I don't think he's going to win. But the only problem I have with this, I don't like starting on a negative foot, but it's the build has been like, every time they've been allowed to do something, the build has been, you know, really, it's been interesting and I like it and there's history there and they've, you know, they've tapped into that really well. But it has felt like it's come around so fast, and I'm still not past this idea that if we thought, and I know the reason, because nobody thought this, but if we were going to do this match, why couldn't Bayley have just got a big win at WrestleMania, which she should have had a match anyway, and then you could have rolled right on out of there into this? Because I mean, again, it's a Rhea Ripley situation, it's a Bobby Lashley, it's a Roman Reigns. Right now, you don't take the title off Bianca Belair, because that would be crazy. You know, she's our project that we're trying to develop. And they will have a great match. You know, we've seen them have great matches. But it would just have been so good if there had been just one story point, had they had just a little bit more time that made you go, well, we're going to have to wait and see. And also, I don't think you even do a rematch with this. So where Bayley goes after this, I imagine Sasha Banks probably returns, you know, soon afterwards. So I guess there's that intrigue. But this is another one where on the night, I'll love it. But leading up to it, it's left me, I don't want to say cold. That's a bit extreme, but, you know, in that kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, Bayley's obviously had to work hard to get the quote-unquote heat that she got on SmackDown to make the feud feel like there's something there. Because they were doing good work together early this year that really did help, I think, Bianca on the way to what we got at WrestleMania. But as you say, what's Bayley been doing since? Her last match on SmackDown prior to WrestleMania was like February or early March. So she really wasn't being used. I'm still mad that she didn't have a match at WrestleMania, but I'll save that rant since I've already done it about 20 times. But you're absolutely right. It could have positioned her nicely coming out of that to face Bianca Belair. I still think that judging by the star-making thing at WrestleMania, it's all about Bianca Belair, right? Like, they are building her. This is her time. She's going to get a good reign. And I think in WWE eyes, you look at Bayley, the longest reigning SmackDown Women's Champion ever, and just the name value that she brings to the table, it's a good first opponent, right? They just should have done more to make it feel that way rather than it is. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're assuming that we're going to buy into it, which we will on the night, right? But as you say, they haven't done much storyline-wise to make us feel it or believe it. Either way, the match will be good. And I do believe that Sasha and Bianca, the rematch, probably is a SummerSlam match as well. I don't know if WWE can hold it that long. You know, how can they help themselves? I don't know. But at the same time, I do feel like this is a strong victory for Belair in like a first defence. You know, Bayley, as I said, being the champion that she was. In WWE's mind, that's a strong start.
It's beautiful for me. I think it works really nicely. I think it's exactly the right kind of opponent. I think it shows the importance of Bayley, and I'm totally with Simon. I don't understand what they were doing with Bayley at Mania, but I hope that she goes on to get a really nice program off the back of this, whatever it might be. But again, Belair retains. So that's got to mean, surely we've got to have some titles changing hands, surely, off the back of, you know, it's backlash after WrestleMania backlash after all. Al, you've been banging on about the Mysterios tagging together for a while. You've spoken to Dominic about it before. They're beating the old dirty dogs, aren't they? Surely.
I like the way that Michael Cole just always gets their name wrong. It's like the top dogs. And they're just like, that's not even our
Michael,
name.
We gave you a new dog nickname so that you could use your big dog thing again, and you're saying it wrong. What's wrong with you?
That's how important the dirty dogs are to WWE. I mean, I like it as well that essentially Simon described Asuka as Dolph Ziggler earlier. Like, you're just really good, but enjoy this meandering. I mean, there's a part of me that's a bit like, I know the tag match didn't take place at WrestleMania in the end anyway, so we wouldn't have got the moment, but the Mysterio tag team win in front of fans feels like it would be a big moment, right? The father-son connection, big baby faces, feels like it would have been good in front of a crowd. So obviously I get why they didn't do that, because it was just the SmackDown before WrestleMania. Is now the time to do it? I don't know, but at the same time, having the Mysterios lose would suck a bit as well, because I really wanted this to be a grand story when the Mysterios got together and really star-making for Dominic. At the moment, they're just doing what WWE does and they're a bit 50-50 about everything. And that's kind of leaving me a bit underwhelmed with the whole journey. So if they were to win Sunday, you'd be a bit like, oh, they've won, rather than it's the climax of something great and the start of something else. So I think there's work to do story-wise, but the Dirty Dogs are literally just two pretty good wrestlers who are the tag champs right now. They don't have any kind of story other than the challenges around them. So the Mysterios could and probably should win. But again, and this is maybe indicative of WWE full stop, the tag division just doesn't have that much spark at the moment. Certainly not as much as I believe they could have had with this story.
I'm with you. I'm really with you. I think I'm maybe a bit more, I really hope that the Mysterios do win. It should be done in front of fans, but I understand the situation we're in. I think that's a really nice moment. And if we can then come off the back of that and, I mean, literally do all the things that you've just mentioned, make it feel like a big deal. Oh my gosh, you know, father and son as a dual champ. When the hell does that ever happen? But then also, and I know that this is never going to happen, but then revive the tag team scene within that and come up with some new teams that connect there, not just, you know, do Alpha Academy, Dirty Dog, Street Profits over and over again. I think it's just such an easy story to tell, right? And the best stories either have a little bit of reality in them or they're simple to tell. This has both. You know, their father and son, that's real. And seeing them win a major championship would be awesome. We just need to make sure that we play it out. So, you know, if we do get to, SummerSlam or Survivor Series or even the Royal Rumble, every single match they have can feel like an event, because you're like, oh, I don't want to see, you know, Ray and Dominic lose because they go home to each other and have dinner. I don't know, whatever father and son doing this one day. But I don't want to go too off on a tangent, but T-Bar, or Dominic Dijakovic, you know, he made a point the other day on Twitter that the tag team division is actually great. And he was doing it sarcastically. I'm like, I didn't say this to him, but if he does listen, I'll say it to him now. He is right, but you have to do things with those teams. And at the moment, WWE just isn't doing it. Like, we are seeing a lot of repeats, which is fine for WrestleMania Backlash, of course. But if we can use this as a catalyst to do better, then I really think there's something there. Because, again, it's just so easy to say, isn't it wonderful that, you know, the dad and his boy, especially because he's one of the best of all time, were able to, you know, pull off this amazing feat.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Simon Miller from What Culture Wrestling, looking forward to WrestleMania Backlash here on the Talk Wrestling Podcast in your Fight Night feed. Don't forget to give us a rating and a review. It does really help find people find the show. Right, let's get into our interviews now. We'll talk AEW Blood and Guts coming up with Steph Chase. And we've got the Bushwhackers on the way. But first, before we get to a legendary tag team, let's talk to a current great, formerly known as the Rascals, now known as MSK, the current reigning defending NXT Tag Team Champions, caught up with our very own Alex McCarthy this past week.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of Talk Wrestling here on TalkSport 2 in the UK. Wesley, Nash Carter, MSK. You know what I'm going to start with, boys? The biggest scoop in the industry. What does MSK stand for?
MSK stands for whatever you wanted to
say. Oh, I knew you were doing this to me.
MSK stands for Wesley Nash Carter. It stands for our lifestyle. It stands for what we stand for. It stands for
two dudes hanging out.
Really cool things. It's honestly, it's.
What do you think MSK stands for?
Well, this is it. This is like the
what
hottest.
What do you think it stands for?
This is the hottest thing on Twitter. Everyone's like, what is it, man? Theories are flying around, but I digress. I think
okay. Well, so, it may not be
fine.
We knew when you came, obviously, like the Rascals is what everyone knew you as, right? So when you came into WWE, whether we want to get into what it means or not, how quickly did you arrive on the new name, the new personas, all that stuff?
Pretty much when we got the call, we kind of just knew it was time to grow and to progress and to take that next jump. If you look at some of the greatest wrestlers of all time, they knew when it was time to change. And so that's what we felt. It was time to change and present a new form of who we are to a new audience who necessarily may have not never seen us before. So,
and we never changed who we are or how we do our thing. It's just a new little bit of polish on it. It's just presented a whole different way, but we're still ourselves, still the same goofy dudes, cracking jokes, pulling pranks, and
hanging out.
Well, I mean, of course, the Rascals as well came with Trey Miguel, and there was a time where like this kind of send off and impact. Everyone was like, oh, maybe the whole collective is going to come to WWE, and that didn't transpire in the end. I guess it would have been cool to do that, and I don't know what happened there or anything, but has it been nice kind of reestablishing yourself, like this fresh thing, just you two You know what I mean? Like a bit of a departure from the Rascals, I guess.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But we've always been the tag team. Even if you looked at our past work, it was still pretty much just us as a tag team. There was hardly ever any six-man tags. So nothing really changed too much in that aspect.
And initially, it was just us. It started out with us just traveling and going internationally to the UK. We were under a different banner the first time that we went there. But we've gone through some changes.
Heck, like three name changes.
Yeah. but we landed here and it's great. We've never really lost who we are. And with us being the tag team, it was just easy for us to just continue to transition and move, because people see, if they see one of us, they're expecting to see the other.
Yeah.
So that already establishes us as a tag team right there, when people automatically relate you to another. And as our careers just progressed, the addition of our friends and our brothers and things like that, it just happened, but we were still a part of just that tag team. We were the tag team in our group. So when everything transpired and we ended up here, it was a no-brainer for us to continue to be the tag team guys.
Well, let's talk about you guys ending up here, because it's obviously been what wild success you've had in like a short space of time. Dusty Rhodes Classic, the hardware on your waist right now. What's the conversation like coming to the company? Is this like a Triple H conversation where he's, you know, is that how it happens? Or is that something that you don't really talk to him until you arrive there? How did it work out for you boys?
Just being able to come down and see and take a tour of things was pretty cool and talk to him. But even before that, I was already kind of set in my mind, because I love WWE. I've always wanted to be a WWE superstar. I've always seen myself under this banner, which is completely still mind blowing.
So cool. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, for me, I've always wanted to be here.
And I as well wanted to always be here too, that this is where the best are. And I hold a lot of, like, me getting through some of my rough time periods in life to wrestling. So like, and yeah, it's just so cool. Like, it's really hard to even put into words. Like, I'm trying to articulate it and make it sound all special and stuff like that. But it's easier to just strip it down and just say it at its bare minimum. This is really, really, really awesome.
It's the best time of life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've had the matches to go with it as well, man, with like Grizzled Young Veterans. And we know, obviously, you took the title off. Well, I say off. They were vacant, but you took them away from Grizzled Young Veterans and Legado del Fantasma. I just imagine, because you've had such a hot start, that you must be working fairly closely with someone like Triple H. You know, what kind of influence has he exerted on you thus far? When I have these conversations, William Regal doesn't ever seem to be too far away either. You know, what kind of guys have you, you know, worked closely with thus far? Because it's one thing to kind of be new, but then obviously they've had shown so much belief in you straight away.
We've gotten to have conversations with Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Road Dogg, Terry Taylor, Fit Finlay, Scott Armstrong. Like, it's just so crazy, the wealth of knowledge that is here. And especially because it's most of these guys we idolized. We wanted to be them. And now they're in our corner saying, go.
Yeah.
Go do it. Like, and they believe in us. That's the biggest part, is like the belief that you feel from them is just, I want to be so great for them and for him. Yeah. And for, like,
it's infectious. Like, the energy that they have, the enthusiasm, the belief that they have in us, and the way that they are motivating us to be the better versions of ourselves. Like, it's even more motivating for us to push past any kind of plateaus that we may be having, just so that we can not only do it for each other, ourselves, but for them too, because they are giving us so much to themselves with advice. like critiques and just different ways of being able to present yourself that would just work better or may not. And they give that out. They give that like ability for us to make that decision. And it's just special. Like it's, it really is hard to put into words unless you've actually had that done for you. Hmm. Like if you've ever had somebody that you've looked up to take the time to sit you down and say, hey, this is better than this. But if you feel that this is better, go ahead and you'll learn that the other one isn't. It's so cool to be underneath this learning tree. This learning tree is just so much.
I mean, and that's the thing too. Like you, like I said, it makes you feel like 10 foot tall. I bet. But if, to me personally, I think my favorite thus far was the Dusty Rhodes Classic final. That was, I think that was, it just had a bit of everything, man. Like the emotion in there as well. It was just so good. Talk to me about immediately after that. You go backstage, whether it be yourselves and how that felt, because you know. Man, did you feel like you proper knocked out of the park like I did? And what's the reaction like?
The first thing that we did is just hug, cry, say, I love you. Thank you. Like, yeah, man, it just, there's so many emotions there that like, I can't really pinpoint anything else because it was just so much. And it just, calling my mom and all of that, it just,
walking back with all the confetti on me and just the applause from everyone, the appreciation for what we were able to do out there. I felt out of my body. I possibly astral projected. And I just watched this entire like scene play out from speaking with Triple H and Shawn Michaels to speaking with everyone that was watching the match. I was beside myself just taking this in because it was hard for me to believe that this had happened until we got up to the locker room. Adrenaline went down a little bit and we were like, yeah, that really happened.
Yep.
And then we had another moment of, I love you. Like, this is great, but what's next? And
you these see what's next.
So, like, it was a great moment to have, but it was short-lived. It was very short-lived because you don't get very many chances to stop and smell the roses. But when you do, we take them and then we move on to the next thing so we can get ready to smell those roses as well.
Absolutely, man. I know we've only got a couple of minutes left here, so I want to kind of touch on what you both said about being WWE fans, right? Growing up, that this is kind of the place you wanted to be. Let's talk about tag team inspiration as you two came together, right? What were the kind of teams that you're both like, yeah, man, we gravitate towards those guys? Because I know you're in your, what, late 20s, both of you mid to late 20s. So for me, I'm like 33. So like Hardy Boys, Edge, Christian, Dudley's, they're all my kind of guys, right? What was it like for you?
Same guys.
Same.
Throw DX in the mix as well.
Yeah.
Any form of them.
Road Dogg and yeah. and Billy. Badass was awesome. Yeah. Like it, the energy that they had. Mm. And then,
then if you want to go to like the 2006 with Sean and Triple H, man. Awesome. I loved that. Yeah. Mm. Top of speed. Come on, man. Come on, man.
That's the fun stuff that we want to do. Like,
let me get some spray paint, bro.
I mean, there's so many great tag teams.
Yeah, we might have to make our own little custom NXT Tag Team Championship.
Nah, I don't want it. I don't want
it. Come on, man. You got to think about this. Yeah. With a green strap.
That would be sweet. I want to spin them.
Wait, listen, the merch sales would be big. I'm just saying. There's money in it.
Green spinner NXT belts.
Come on.
Well, fellas, thank you so much for joining Talk Wrestling here today. I've had a blast chatting to you guys. Hopefully one of these days we'll do it actually in person in the UK. Would be great.
Awesome.
You got fond memories of the UK, right?
So many great memories from the top to the bottom of the UK. Like, we have always had a great time. You've always welcomed us so well. And it felt like home.
Yeah.
And that's why we always came back as much as we did.
It was cool. There was one tour over there where no one knew that we were coming over. And then to be able to make a surprise entrance and the crowd erupt. Like, that's when, at least for me, I knew, like, oh, this is like second home. Like,
yeah.
This is, they love us. They really love us.
Oh, you want to go back and watch that now. I want to
come back to the UK so
bad. Let's hope MSK get over here with the hardware, NXT Tag Team Champions. Thanks again, Wesley, NASCAR. Thank you so much for your time, fellas.
Thank you very much for your time as well, brother.
You're listening to Talk Wrestling. This is Talk Sports Fight Night Feed, the Talk Wrestling podcast. I nearly said Talk Sport 2 there, because we are on Talk Sport 2 every Monday night for you. From MSK, let's turn our attention to a Hall of Fame level tag team, those legendary Kiwis, the Bushwhackers, speaking with our very own Alex McCarthy.
Let me say, awesome to have the Bushwhackers with us here at Talk Wrestling on Talk Sport in the UK. Bona fide legends. And let me say, Hall of Famers, man. That was such a delight.
No, not only, Alex, not only WWE Hall of Famer, but we're pro wrestling Hall of Famers too.
Yeah, exactly. We went into
pro wrestling Hall of Fame in 2020.
And richly deserved as well, let me tell you that. What I want to say about the Hall of Fame in 2015, a lot of people were kind of like, it was overdue. Like, did you think the call was ever going to come?
Yeah, that's what Luke said. I told them when I was excited to get called up, but I said, about bloody time. But the funny part is, Alex, a lot of people in North in US, especially the northerner peoples, they thought that we got the on Facebook and social media, we were knocked. They all said, why are they putting these two clowns in the business? Now, they didn't know till they put the story in and saw us go in the Hall of Fame. They didn't realize that we both started. We started traveling around the world in 68. We started tagging in 66. Butch, you know, we started tagging in 66. And we first come to North America in 72. We'd worked with, when we started talking about names we'd worked with, you know, we'd worked with Andre the Giant in the 60s. Wow. Butchered me in single matches. This was well before he came to North America. He came to New Zealand, and we were working, and that we worked with him in single matches and in tag matches. And then we'd worked with Peter Maivia, The Rock's grandfather, and Butch went over to Samoa and worked the 10th anniversary over Samoa against Peter. You know, that's The Rock's grandfather. Mm-hmm. We worked against The Rock's father around the world. We'd worked against Stu Hart, you know, Bret Hart's father.
Of course.
Wrestled him and Killer. I don't know whether you heard of Killer Kowalski at Train.
Of course, Train Triple H.
And that, you know, he was selling out Madison Square Gardens in the 60s and 70s. We worked against them. So we've been around. When they heard all these names, then they realized we weren't just a flash in the pan.
In other words, Alex, what Luke's just saying, we served our time.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not in jail.
Well,
after you read our book that we're just about to be put out there, we should have been put in jail 10 times over. And if we had done the stuff that we did, that we've also put in the book, honestly, we would have been kicked out of the States the second day we were there.
Tell me about that, fellas. You got a book coming out? I want to know all about it.
Yeah,
well, we can't tell you too much, mate, but it's called Blood, Sweat and Cheers. the blood and the sweat is of us from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and the cheers are WWE. And it's about us right from when we first started going overseas together in the 60s, going up into while the Civil War was going in Malaya. You know, it wasn't Malaysia then. It was called Malaya. Malaya in Asia. We would drive up while the curfew was on and they were fighting in the jungle. You know, it was third world. Elephants were working along the side of the roads and we were high and driving up through the jungle. crazy and didn't give a f-. There was a curfew, 5 o'clock curfew. We, you know, the promoter or the kid, people driving us didn't care. You know what I mean?
That's madness, man. Do we know roughly when the book's going to be available for everyone?
I would say in the later part of this year, October. Yeah.
Excellent. Can't wait for that.
When it comes out, Alex, we'll have to hide. Because when some of the wrestlers read it,
Butch is already hiding in New Zealand.
I'm okay down here because New Zealand's been cut off from the rest of the world because of the virus. So I'm safe. But when Luke appears around there at any of the shows, he's either going to get mobbed by the wrestlers or by the wrestlers' wives, of course.
I can't wait to read some of those stories, fellas.
It's as it is, Alex, I can assure you. It's as it is.
That's the only way I'd like it. Excellent. I honestly cannot wait to get stuck into that. I mean, for me, I'm 33 years of old now. So to me, like WWF in the mid 90s is where I sort of my fandom started. Obviously, kind of retrospectively, watched a lot of your career and stuff. But WWE was obviously the main part. And as you say, that was almost like gratification for you guys, right? You'd been around the world, you'd done all the hard work. And then you reach the apex. Talk to me about getting there and like Vince McMahon, I guess, laying out his vision for you guys and, you know, arriving there.
Yeah, certainly. Well, we were before when we got the call to go up to see Vince, we were with the NWA and we were working then against the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic tag team. And the Rock and Roll Express and us, we were doing the main events around all the NWA, smaller shows, not the huge big shows, smaller shows, and we were selling them out. And the matches were just tremendous because you had four guys that didn't have big heads. All they wanted to do was entertain the people, and they're true professionals, you know. But unfortunately, something happened with one of the Rock and Roll Express, and they got fired. And so the NWA gives us another push on TV, puts the North American tag team belts around us, which we used to call the pacifiers, just to keep guys there, right? Anyway, it was at that time where Luke got the call to go up there from Vince, you know, So he takes us up there, first class plane. Limo picks us up into his big office, big building in Stanford. You know, here we are looking around, you know, these still a bit of the old Kiwis, but redneckers, especially me. Yeah. Anyway, we go in there and I've been watching you guys. I've been hearing good things, this and that. I'd love to bring you guys in. He says, what do you guys think? Or I'd like to bring you in as the good guys, baby faces. And Luke pipes up and says, oh, no, mate. What about if you bring us in as heels and we, you know, do the thing and change it? Because that's the way we always did it, right? Yeah. But we never knew this at the time. You don't tell Vince, or as we called him, Caesar, anything. He tells you what he's going to do. But I must admit, he said it politely. And then he said, as right then, me being the uncontrollable one of the two of us and a bit uncouth, I jumped up on his desk. I kid you not, on my hands and knees. So here I am now on his desk, on my hands and knees. My head's about 3 inches from him, probably spitting as I'm talking. And I said, Vince, if you think you can make baby faces out of these faces, we are in. I gave him, and then Luke gave him, and then Luke will tell you what he said.
He said to us then, he says, look at the mugs on my top baby faces. Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Jake the Snake, Hexagon Juggin. He says, they haven't got pretty kisses, have they? Which, you know, when you look at their faces now, Hulk and Randy and Jake and Hexagon Juggin, none of them, they're all hard faces.
They're not pretty boys.
That's amazing, though. Like, you just mentioned some of the people there, right? Like in that time, in WWE, some, you know, major stars. The locker room is something that has always been spoken about in that era too. Much more like maybe the Wild West and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, what now, mate, Alex? A lot of people don't know that, but he never gave us the character. He gave us the name. The Bushwhackers,
yeah.
But the character came from us, you know. Butch, you know, when we were heels, and that when we went outside the ring, we tried to scare the crowd all the time. So we always swung up our arm or made some noise. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Butch says to me, "Hey, let's go to the ring swinging our arms. Instead of just, you know, like we do, we used to just." Throwing them up like that outside to scare the fans. But Butch said, let's go to the ring marching, swinging our arms. And I bitched straight away. He says, oh, my shoulders are fucked. And my shoulders are fucked. Butch says to me, do you want to make money? I said, do you want to make money? I still remember that. You know, my shoulders. The shoulders, look at it, it's fucking right out. That happened in Japan in the 70s. The guy suplexed me by the rope and my foot caught the top rope and it drove my shoulder in the mat. So this shoulder doesn't go up any. You know, over time, your shoulder, but this shoulder's been like that for, you know, 40 years. And when Butch said that to me, I soon threw that shoulder up going to the ring.
It was amazing. It was amazing how fast the fans caught on.
Yeah.
About our first time they played our music, they'd seen that. And we had one lot of TV and we marched out there. We had a huge part of the audience marching with us. And with a month, nearly everybody in that arena was swinging their arms as we walked out there. So it was amazing. Just a simple thing like that. And then we developed the little bit of the lick on the head and the rubbing the heads. And we added a bit more bull as we went along. And it was all good. But I'll tell you the worst thing we did. Are you familiar what a holly is?
A holly?
A holly.
Holly. Holly. H-O-N-G-I.
Oh, no. No, I'm not.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know we have Polynesians and they're called the Maori, right?
Right.
And, right, well, that's their greeting, the very Polynesian way of greeting. They tap each other's noses together. Not a hit, but just the two noses touch each other. That's a holly. They still do it now. You know, and a lot of people do it. It's done regularly. And a lot of the Polynesians and some of the other South Pacific countries do it as well. So they came up with the idea that they were a new gimmick for us to add some more flavor was to do this holly so they could bring some different merchandise out. So they made some new tops for us with a holly with the two heads. Touching his the nose and that. Anyway, cut a long story short. We go into the bloody ring, and boom, 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 and then we go all crazy, and then touch the noses, then back, pull a face, and away we go. Well, after about 2 or 3 weeks, now all the rednecks are wanting to come up to us. They didn't know how to honky, so they would want to headbutt us. So every time we went to put our the nose there, they would come in and go, bang, they're fucking there, knock us out. We'd be nearly on the bloody ground. And I said to Luke after, we put up with it for a couple of months. My head was like a cabbage. I said, oh, we're not doing this anymore, mate. So that was a mistake. That wasn't us that introduced that. That was the office, and it was never explained to the people as such.
At that run, you got really hot, right? Really popular.
Yeah.
Do you think there should have been more, or I say any, tag title runs? Was that never discussed?
Well, we started, mate. I'm going to tell you, we actually started to do a title run with the head, Tully and Arn. They were what were they called, Butch?
Was it the Brainbusters?
Brainbusters, yeah.
There you go.
We actually did an arena match, and then we did a TV match at an angle to start a tour with them, to go around and that. And then the next TV, the following week, we were getting a what's-the-name match. What do they call now when they give you jobbers? You know,
squash.
To put you on,
squash.
Yeah, they're giving us a squash match, and our finish was a battering ram. You know, Butcher grabbed my head. Now the kid we were running, Butch was running at, turned and put his hip bone. My head hit his hip bone, and I hairline fractured a couple of my vertebrae in my neck. Oof. Just hairline, but it tore the muscle. It tore the muscle that there, and I was out for about 8 weeks. Or 10 weeks and that. So that title run, you know, poor Butch, I killed the title run. But we, you know, our characters, you don't really need titles, you know what I mean? Mm. Would have been great to have that run there, because the Brainbusters were the best guys we'd ever worked with in WWE. Yeah. You know, they were from the same school that we were from. Well, you know, They'd worked in NWA for years and years, you know, and Tully and Arn were perfectionists.
Mm.
And,
yeah, they
were so easy to work with. Where everyone else we worked with in WWE, apart from Ted DiBiase and IRS, everybody else we worked with, and that we had to leave. And Vince put them with us to groom the Nasty Boys, the two blonde-haired kids, and everyone. There was only a few teams that we worked with who were perfectionists, you know what I mean? Yeah. The rest of them were put with us. Vincent brought them in, and he put them with us to groom them.
Also, Alex, we were just about to have a run with the Million Dollar Man and DiBiase and IRS, and we did an angle with them as well. They were the champions. And we came over to your country, Britain, to do a tour there, and Germany. And after the first night, everything was going good. Ted got into a little bit of strife. His wife had found out and said, if you're not back within a day or so, the marriage is over. So Ted, of course, hopped on a plane, left straight away. So that was the end of that one as well. So we missed out on not only working with two real professionals and having a hell of a match, we missed out on the run, we missed out on the belts. But the thing was, we really didn't have that many great tag teams to work with the whole time we were there. But you didn't need to, because even Vince said, you can stick you guys in with broomsticks and you'll have a hell of a match. And they used to, Alex, even though we weren't main event, and Vince didn't usually put main event tags on anyway, no matter who they were.
Yeah.
But he would do his main event just after intermission, and then he would always have Luke and I on the last match. no matter who we were with. It didn't matter, because his idea was you send them home the happy pattern. So the Bushwhackers would come out last match, music would be playing, nobody would have gone yet because they want to get entertained, and they'd be all with it marching, blah, blah, happy. Bushwhackers get the hand raised. Whoa, yay! Everybody comes home as happy as Larry. And so we were in the last match. Nearly all of the last half of the time we were still with the WWE.
Let me ask you something on that. And I know I haven't got much longer with you guys, so last question here. It sounds like Vince was very fond of you guys, right? There's this kind of...
Very fond.
There's this kind of ongoing perception of him, you know, reality meets the character or whatever. What's he really like? How was he really to the Bushwhackers?
He was great. All the agents used to come up to us, Pat Patterson and co, and he used to say, God, Vince loves you guys. You got no idea. Because we did... We brought a lot of energy into the WWE when we came in. We picked up the pace, even though we were, I was in my early 40s. I think Luke had just turned 40 maybe. And we picked up the pace because we were used to it. And so everybody else, of course, picked up their pace too. And we worked our ass off every night because we were New Zealanders. We were used to that. That's what you did, you know? And so he treated us good. We were there. But the trouble is, Alex, with a lot of wrestlers, they expect to go in there and they expect to be there for life. You can't be there for life. You can only be there for so long. He's got a whole card. You've got to keep changing the wrestlers, the characters, everything else. Otherwise, people will walk away from the TV, as you know.
And he's been in that position recently, you know, with the main guys he's had, he's been stuck with the same main guys. You know, poor John Cena. They could never get anyone to get up to his status. And that, and John Cena was on and on and on. You get someone on the status and you can't get anyone to follow them. Now he never gets anyone up to that status. You know, if you look at it now, Alex, you know, there was Hulk, then there was the Ultimate Warrior, and then there was Stone Cold, and then there was The Rock, and then there was Cena. You know, you had the Bret and the Shawn Michaels in between, but they weren't on the same status as the guys I'm talking about. And then I think Vince realized with John Cena that, you know, you can't take guys that far today. Otherwise, when they retire or they move on to movies and that, you're left with no one in their place.
Yeah, they probably think it's Roman now, I guess.
Yeah. You know, Roman they've been playing with for years, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's not up on the level of those other guys. The guys I mentioned. No one's been up on that level, you know, to me. And then about you either, mate, but I'm just telling you that.
No, you're right. That's rarefied air, without a doubt. But Butch, did you have something to say there, sorry?
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, you said about the dressing room. And every time we walked into the dressing room, we'd liven it up. And everybody, no matter what territory we went to, even WWF, everybody called each other mate after meeting. Okay, mate. Hi, mate. Hi, mate. You know, because they just loved all that stuff, you know what I mean? So they'd pick up our sayings, and I'd bring in some Cockney sayings, you know, that I heard over the years, because we mixed with a tremendous amount of English wrestlers. That's how we learned our trade. English wrestlers come out here. We'd never seen TV. We'd never seen wrestling on TV. We learned from a lot of English wrestlers. And we'd go and have this saying, you know, up the frog and toad and buddy, you know, your boat race and mince pies. And so I'd do all that stuff. So they loved it. They'd all be saying it, you know. That was the thing Vince liked as well. When the Bushwhackers were around, he said, everybody's happy. So as you said, did you like Vince? Yes, I do. I think it's him and his whole family were so good to us, what they said they did. And we still get checks from the WWE, not much now, I will admit, but we still get little royalties here and there, you know? I don't complain.
As Butch said, I can never knock him. You know, we've been in the business so long, we know you've got to move on. And we, you know, we had a run there, and that's it. Anyhow, mate, I've got to say, too, we Butch is supposed to come over this year earlier on. He couldn't come because of the quarantine business. New Zealand has only got, if Butch leaves home and that, he has to wait 80 days. There's a wait for 80 days to get back in the country. So if he comes on a tour for 40 days, he's got another 40 days sitting in a hotel before he goes home. But we hope to do a final tour later this year. And we hope to put UK in on the end of the tour.
And also we have a book coming out later on in the year. And it's the Bushwhackers, and it's called Blood, Sweat and Cheers.
Alex McCarthy in conversation with the Bushwhackers. Brilliant stuff from them. Thank you so much. And we finish things off with Steph Chase from Digital Spy talking about AEW's Blood and Guts this past week.
Well, I really enjoyed the Blood and Guts match. I really did. I think the actual match itself was very well done. I think they took the right elements from the classic War Games. I think it looked really good how they presented it. I liked little things that they did that were different to NXT, such as having the wrestlers outside the cage. When it comes to having a roof on the cage, I liked that. But then, of course, that led to the finish of going on top of the cage. But before we get to that, I think the actual match was really great. I think it delivered on the, maybe not the guts, but certainly on the blood. I think the way they pitted the two teams against each other, the orders that they had everyone come in was really great. And there were some really cool spots. Some really standout people that needed that moment to shine, such as Sammy Guevara, and I think Santana and Dax as well, and Sean Spears all really made a really good impression. I think the only thing I can kind of fault in that way is I think Wardlow, there should have been more made of him. But as far as the ending, I loved how it was storyline-wise, and I feel like the camera angles were not good, and I think that's just what it suffered from. I really do. And I think that there were some other issues in the match that kind of way that I would have changed, such as the commercial break timing. I think that a lot of people missed some things that were watching, you know, with the ad breaks. But as far as the ending, I just wish they would show a different angle because I was so into it.
Yeah, I think Steph's hit the nail on the head, Will, in the sense that the actual match itself was excellent, I felt. It's been remembered for maybe the wrong reasons because of that camera angle at the end and Jericho kind of appearing to land on like crash mats, and they had made what the metal stage seemed like it was metal was cardboard. Of course, like, let's not get this twisted. That is fine. We don't want 50-year-old Jericho plummeting to his death. We want Jericho to be safe. It's just the fact that we've seen some different camera angles on Twitter since, you know, like far wide shot ones that it looks a lot better, right? It's not as obvious, the stuff. And I guess, like, the argument that people are making is if, I don't know, if you're watching Game of Thrones and the dragon breathes fire and you see that the fire is not fire, you know, it's like a red line or something, you'd go, that's a bit lame, you know, like, and it's kind of the effects, you know, you just want it to look good. And I think that's all it was. But to me, the actual match, I agree with Steph completely in the sense that FTR, Proud and Powerful, Sammy in particular, looked excellent. Loved it for them. The commercial break, which kind of stole away Wardlow's entry. I get it, you have to have the breaks, but that seemed like a sucky point to have one and really didn't help him, who I think he's one of the biggest stars who's going to be out and coming out of this whole thing. And the chair shot bothered me a little bit. That I think Sammy took it, where it's square on the head, right, which is one thing. But if you're going to do that, don't then have camera angles that kind of pan away. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they took it away at the wrong time, where it really took away from the impact of taking such a move. So, to me, the match and the contents of it were excellent. Really, really excellent. But it would have been legendary had they got those production things just a bit better, I think.
Yeah, Sorry,
go on,
Steph. Sorry, Will. I was going to say, it's kind of, it's really sad that this, like, these production issues happened, and it's hard because the comparison is, of course, going to be with WWE. We have decades of experience, you know, with the production of a wrestling show, which is it really always the easiest thing to produce and direct, because there are camera cuts that you have to do, things you kind of have to hide and stuff. And I think that they need to get a handle on it better. I'm willing to give them like that time to grow. And hope they do. I hope they learn from this mistake and think, okay, we really tried to execute something great here. We were just let down by these production issues that we do have to iron out.
I feel like 2 years in, as we pretty much are now, those production issues should already be ironed out. I did think it was a problem. It did take me out of it a little bit. And separately to that, and I can't figure out whether this is a... And I want to be clear on this, because I've not had my say on the match yet. First thing to say is that overall, really entertaining, some great spots. They all worked their asses off. Like, it was great. But there were a few things that took me out of it a little bit. I'm really glad you highlighted Wardlow. I think after giving him that win over Hager, they've really taken all the steam out of him over the last 4 or 5 months. There's been nothing really for me since then that's deserved what should have turned into a massive push for him. But the combined with the big spot at the end and the breaks, I can't figure out whether this is something that I am noticing as a wrestling nerd, and whether this is something that, like, I don't want to say the average fan, but maybe the casual fan wouldn't have noticed as much. I thought all of the blading spots were really obvious. I thought, like, there were times when they'd just get punched and then they'd be crawling into a corner and suddenly they're bleeding all over the place. And I just thought, like, there's some really seasoned people in there. We know that they're doing it. I think that they just, maybe it was the production, maybe it was the cuts, maybe it was, who knows, that cuts being meant in a different way, but there were just a few production things that did take me out of it a little bit, and probably held it back from being top tier.
One of the criticisms as well, right, was Jericho audibly calling spots, I think, on the home stretch, that was another thing that people picked up on. And you're right, it could just be people like us who know what to look for, I guess, and critique those things. Because what has to be said for blading, it will be very obvious whenever anyone does it, really, if you don't hide and protect them. So that, again, to me, is a production issue, because in WWE, again, if that happens, okay, you've got the blade in your wrist or whatever, in your teeth, whatever they do, they're down on the floor, they're selling, they open up, and the other talent will be keeping the ref busy, the camera will pan to them, and then, like you said, it comes back to them, they're bleeding. Maybe not off a punch, I understand what you're saying there, Will, but I do think, again, it kind of comes back to the way that they shot the match. And, yeah, again, it was their first one, so you could kind of say, yeah, maybe they'll learn some lessons on how to produce that going forward. But, yeah, it was just unfortunate. Because, again, as we go back to it, the narrative, I actually really enjoyed the end of Sammy kind of surrendering as a way to save Jericho. And then, obviously, MJF just going, well, I don't care, and doing it anyway. I actually really dug that. But again, that's kind of been lost among the other critiques.
Yeah, I think what you were saying, Will, about like being a nerd and seeing things closer, like we do, and that is kind of sometimes can take you out of it, because we know so much. Like, we know things about blading that a more casual fan or someone tuning in wouldn't. But then I think the ending spot probably looks even worse to someone that doesn't know anything about wrestling, because at least we expect a padding.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so I feel that was, you know, extra unfortunate. But what you were saying, Alex, the storytelling, I do really like that. It made sense in the story that we've had with the Inner Circle, especially between MJF, Jericho, and Sami, to see that ending.
Yeah, the storytelling was definitely up there. And look, if you want to take the show as a whole as well, and we understand now that the first half of it was taped so that they could be set up for the main event, it kind of makes perfect sense. But, you know, Kenny, with the stuff with Moxley and Kingston and everything there, was I thought, really well executed. Cody Rhodes, interesting. Did we see the comments of Bubba Ray Dudley this past week, basically having a dig about the fact that, was it Bubba Ray? Who am I thinking of? Bubba Ray Dudley had a dig about the belts. Who had a go at Cody Rhodes? Somebody else had a go at Cody Rhodes. Everyone's just swinging at AEW this week, aren't they?
Deadspin, the outlet.
Oh, forget it. If it's Deadspin, forget about it. I was thinking about the belts thing, but yeah, no, let's not give them any breath at all. But we are getting some kind of big announcement announcement apparently from Cody Rhodes this week. Britt Baker comes out and looks an absolute, you know, $1 million. All in all, it's a great show. I just think it's almost a compliment that we're picking it apart a little bit. And
yeah,
whether it's Orange Cassidy or whether it's Pac, I am so ready for either of those going up against Kenny Omega. That gets me well excited. Steph?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Orange Cassidy, and I think that's a great match to have with a full house that they'll have at the pay-per-view for the first time in a long time. I think he's the guy.
I do get Bubba Ray's point about Nakazawa holding the Impact title as opposed to Kenny, or, you know, I do think it's a bit pedantic, to be honest, but I understand where he's coming from. I still think it's great the way Kenny's kind of holding himself and the way he's acting on screen as this almighty belt collector. And Orange Cassidy, really, when you think about it, could be the perfect foil for him. He really could. And it's another hurdle where no one expects Cassidy to beat him, but it would be damn entertaining what they're going to do together. So I'm here for it. Obviously, we all rep Pac, especially my Newcastle heritage reps Pac. But I'll take Cassidy in this spot for sure.
Have I ever told you about going to the Royal Rumble in Texas, where Pac had a match for the Cruiserweight title, and we managed to go from being the really annoying, slightly drunk British guys during Sheamus's tag match on the pre-show, who people hated that we were doing football chants and being really leery about it, to by the time Pac was on, he was basically the cool-down match ahead of, possibly just before Owens with Jericho in the shark cage and then the Rumble, but he was basically the go get yourself a beer match. And we were so into it that when he won, about 30 or 40 people around us started like jumping down the chairs and giving us high fives and going absolutely mad for it. And we were like, well, I think that even if they aren't behind Pac, we have convinced WWE to get behind Pac for just this small selection of fans. The WWE universe loved Pac for that one moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you convinced the WWE of anything.
Yeah, well, that's
judging by how that worked out.
That's kind of the point I was making.
I know. There you have it, brother.
Anyway, Steph, it's always an absolute pleasure. I hope you're well. Keep doing the wonderful work you're doing. Where can people find the wonderful work you're doing?
You can find my written work in Digital Spy and find me on YouTube. Just type in Stephanie Chase. I'm the wrestling one, not the violinist.
Also, by the way, there is an AEW section on Digital Spy these days, Steph, because of your great work, isn't there?
There is indeed. That's where you'll find AEW stories. My most recent interview was with Sean Spears before Blood and Guts, but even though that's over, he talks about lots of other stuff. He even legit called that Mike Tyson during it, so we'll see if anything comes of that.
Lunatic.
That was your Talk Wrestling podcast here on your Fight Night feed from TalkSport. Don't forget to give us a rating and a review. It really does help people find the show. We really appreciate it every single week. Let us know your thoughts on TalkSport 2 on Twitter. Find Alex at AlexM_TalkSport. I'm at Will Gav, and we've got a couple of huge names coming for you on next week's show around WrestleMania Backlash. Some current WWE champions. That's all I can say for now. Plus a legendary voice of the sport. Just a little teaser for you. That's all coming up. Keep tuned, keep subscribed, give us your rating and review. This has been the Talk Wrestling Podcast.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams.
And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.